Are you a messy desk person or a neat desk person? Okay, careful how you answer. What do you think? If I were to stop by your place and look at your desk, what would I say? Messy? But both are fine. Both are equally fine. Except I want to point out that next time you go into a surgical procedure, if you saw the doctor's implements, you know, and all her things lying on the table like your desk, would you be confident? All right, just wanted to point that out. But how about messy desks? We like messy desks. Who likes messy desks? You know, everything, thank you for your honesty. I think that's great. You know, messy desk, here's the thing. If you have a messy desk, you know where everything is because you put it there. And so all the layers, the historical layers, it's sort of like Indiana Jones. You know, where's that receipt from the lawnmower we got last summer? I can't find it anywhere. Oh, I know exactly where that is. And so it looks like you're rummaging. They're not rummaging. They're just doing a quick Google search with their fingers. And so they're looking through all the papers, and boy, I got it right here. And that's just great. So messy desks can work because we're the ones that make the mess. But of course, neat desks, I think neat desk people can be a little snobby. Yeah, a little judging, just a wee little bit. You know, so we got some neat desk people. Who would admit to having neat desks? Yes, I know my wife's hand went up before yours, Barbara, because as much as you may have a neat desk, nobody has a desk like Melissa. And in fact, Melissa sometimes just sort of scopes out her space. You know, she works from home, mostly, except when she's traveling, and she'll just look, and if there is just too much clutter, she has to stop everything and remove the clutter, don't you? Isn't that true? And now me, I also like neat spaces, but my clutter threshold is a little higher than hers. And so, and she says, yes, that's absolutely correct. I am not messy, but somewhere in the range between messy and neat. I'm like right in there in the middle. Neat desk people are a whole different breed apart. You see, neat desk people are control freaks. And they enjoy, again, they put everything where they want to. It's just they don't put as much stuff. And so to be a neat desk person, it's actually a little simpler because your inventory is lower. Now, if I were to ask you about your desk, which I did, neat, messy, what if I took a walk to your garage? Soon, the neat desk people, soon, just lower, there's fewer of them, right? Or how about in your attic? You know, we're doing a little cleanup around Price Hall, and I really appreciate the goodwill and the spirit. You know, we're just trying to sort of figure out if you have any extra stuff, we want to help you just discard it, because why carry one, you know, baggage into another season? But more importantly, we want to be able to kind of scoot things around and do some cleaning. I understand those cabinets, say, in Price Hall behind stage, they've been there for 20 years. In fact, I'm wondering if we're going to find some money. I'm just thinking maybe we will. But cleaning up is a good thing, and it's an important thing. But there are times when taking the inventory takes so much time that it's so much easier to have a messy desk. But you have to be prepared to put up with the mess. You know, God knows all about messes. I want you to think back. Say the creation story. You know, when it says the Spirit of God moved across the face of the waters, that chaotic moment of darkness, God speaks and says what? Let there be light. Because you don't know if you have a messy desk or a neat desk unless there's light. And although a messy desk may cast a greater shadow, light is always needed whether you're messy or neat. And we need light in our life. And so God puts Adam in the garden. You know, the Hebrew word for man, the human being, Adam, is ish. Can you say that with me? Ish. And you know the word shalom, right? We did that last week with the word, what does that mean? Peace. So now you know two Hebrew words. So man, the simple name for man, transliterated, we call him Adam, that he wasn't really given a pronoun name, but it's man, ish. And woman was also created, and Hebrew word for woman is isha. Can you say that? Isha. So now you know three Hebrew words here at Cold Spring Presbyterian Church. I want you to use them during the day somewhere in a sentence. Okay? Ish and isha were in the Garden of Eden, you could say. There, I gave you a sentence. But in that creation moment, in that wonderful moment, God creates the animals, God does the trees, God creates the scenario across a week's time. And of course, given human beings the way we are, they created quite a mess. Disobedience, indifference, ego, selfishness, pride, eventually jealousy, murder, more lying, more disrespect of people, you know the story. And out of this messiness of life, Jesus, or God, sent prophets to the people. Jesus to create some order out of the messiness, to create some clean out of the mess. He also sent the scriptures. He sent people to stand. He sent judges to help rule. He sent encouraging proclaimers of peace. Eventually, by the time of Jesus, he sent John the Baptist, who was to prepare the way because of all the mess. And Jesus finally appears. And so in this moment, on this crowd of people gathered, they were there. They didn't take a wrong turn. They weren't there by accident. The story as it unfolds is that Jesus was going from one place to another. The people beat him to get there. They just sort of race like a contest. And they end up there, and they want to hear what he has to say. They care so much about his words because his words actually do something. People touch the hem of his garment even. Jesus wasn't even speaking. In fact, it appears Jesus doesn't even notice until after the fact. Someone touches the hem of the garment and immediately they're healed. People want more of that. And so when people are on that great hill, more and more people start gathering, more men, women, children, probably cats and dogs. They had the donkeys there that carried the ones that were a little older. They had people coming of every walk of life. Every language group might have been there. And they were all crowded around waiting for Jesus to speak. And he taught, and he taught, and he taught. Now, my messages may be a little long once in a while. But I know Jesus went on all day long because the disciples, the text says, is that they waited for him to stop and said, now is finally the time for you to send people home to eat. It's time for the hospitality table. And I don't know who had hospitality that week, but they certainly were not prepared for 15,000 people. Oh, wait, Jesus says, why don't you feed them? You remember the story, yes? What look would you have had if Jesus looked at you and said, you feed 15,000 people right now, thank you very much? It's like, what? Philip, in the Gospel of John, his story of this event, he says 6 months' wages would not be enough money to buy all the food we need to feed people, even a little bit. Now, Philip was the one among them, like us, who is able to sort of evaluate the economics of the situation and say, we only have 6 months. If we had 6 months, it wouldn't even be enough to cover. Maybe you'd need 8 months' wages to do all this. And so a lot of times we sort of evaluate the blessings of God. It's sort of like our retirement plan. Do you ever click on your retirement plan if you're so blessed to have one? You know, the one that says, you know, if you retire at age, like a Social Security statement, if you retire at the age of 68, then you get X dollars. If you hold off till 88, you get a whole bunch of money, right? If you retire today, you get nothing. So somewhere along the line, you have to sort of pick, like messy, not so messy. We have to sort of find the range of comfort that we like. But in this situation, Philip says, there's not enough resources. Because even if we had them, it still wouldn't be enough. But Jesus turns to Andrew, and Andrew, he scoped some resources that were live and available, and it was in a bag lunch of a small boy, and he says, I have a couple pieces of bread, maybe not much more than I had in my bag that I shared with Mariah today. Probably no bagels in there, and it may not have been Italian bread, but it might have been something closer to pita, and so he offers the bread, and he has a couple fish. And Philip, Andrew rather, was trying to say, here are the resources that we have. You see, Philip was the one who said, we don't have enough money to do what you're asking us to do. But Andrew says, no, Philip, that's right, we don't have enough money, but let's just look at what we've got. We have some bread and fish here. And then he, sighing perhaps, says, But what would that mean with so many people? Well, we do have resources, but it just doesn't seem to add up. It's just insufficient. So often we look at our own life and we see scarcity. You know, I wrote down a few little facts about hunger in our region. 41.2 million Americans are food insecure. And they define that insecurity. It's not just like poverty or just hunger. It means that people are forced to skip meals, eat less at each meal, or buy cheap, non-nutritious food, or have to make the choice each day whether to feed themselves or their children. So that's what it means. You know, you could be totally no food, but even being food insecure, 41 million Americans face that every day. And it's in our county as well. And Cape May has one of the highest rates of state hunger of children who lack access to healthy and nutritious foods, both in quality and in quantity. Jesus asked the question, if a child were hungry and asked for bread, would you give them a stone? Or if they asked for a fish, would you give them a snake? And so on this mountaintop, the people are hungry, and they realize they don't have the financial resources to run down to KFC or go down to the Wawa and get enough hoagies made. They totally, even if they had 6 months' wages, what would they do with that? You can't convert money into action. Now, this is sort of the trick, you know, when we have resources in the bank. You know, it's great to have the resources, but they need to be converted into something if you're going to use it, to put it to work. Like having a hymnal in a pew rack is great. But until you actually pick up it in your hands and turn to a favorite hymn, then it becomes useful. Otherwise, you're just a church with 300 hymnals. But we're not a church with 300 hymnals. We're a church that sings from hymnals. See, and there's a huge difference. And so to know the facts, we don't have enough money to feed people is one thing, but Andrew comes with what he's got, and Jesus receives that as if it's enough. The disciples must have been just, whoa, what is going on here? Because Jesus said, just go have the people sit in groups. And so they did. And they sat down. Like, please join me at my table. Sit down. What were they going to eat? And I don't know how it happened. I believe the stories in the Gospels. They're not called miracles, you know, as by accident. They're miracles because they're miracles. They can't be explained exactly. But if we were there with our rational thinking and the way that we measure things, and we're so accustomed to getting out the laser pointer and measuring stuff and measure twice, cut once, and we're just used to metrics, percentages, understanding different kinds of data like that, scientific, mechanical, financial. And so this kind of measuring, we're at a loss to sort of figure out, how do we know we have enough? And so Jesus has them all sit down, and they're all ready to eat, and then he somehow makes that bread multiply. I don't know, did he turn to the side and he just keeps pulling bread out of the bag? Did he take the fish and say, excuse me a moment, and then he comes back like with a whole net full of fish? I have no idea. But I do know the scriptures are quite clear that everybody had enough to eat. And not only that, they had so much to eat that they had leftovers. And y'all know I don't like leftovers, right? Right? Maybe you don't like leftovers either. But you know what? Leftovers are not a bad thing. Leftovers are a sign of abundance. Or maybe you weren't hungry and you have extras left over. That is possible. You could have just extras because you didn't take as much as you needed. But the interesting thing is that with the leftovers, you can't keep the leftovers forever. You need to consume the resources that you have and keep some for reserve, but you can't keep them forever because eventually the leftovers, the reserves, will be exhausted. They'll just go bad. They'll get mold. They'll get mildew. So even in the Old Testament times when God provided manna from heaven, His instructions were, you go out in the morning, you'll find plenty of food scattered across the fields. And take only what is sufficient for one day. Because if you try to store the manna, it's just going to rot. And there's a story in the Old Testament about someone trying to hoard it up, and so he wouldn't have to go out the next day. It's probably somebody like me trying to think a little ahead of the story. Oh, well, if I save 2 days' worth, I won't have to get up tomorrow. I can sleep in. But no, no, no. God said, don't try to store up the resources forever. You've got to use them, put them to work. And so the food on the hill, they ended up with leftovers, 12 baskets full. Now, the word for basket, it could be the one for like a huge basket, like the kind of thing you might sit on the ground and fill with things. But it was also a word used for like a knapsack-sized bag that people often carried for a day's journey. You could think of it as a go bag for the disciples. And so the disciples take the leftovers of 12 baskets in their bags, their sacks, their whatever. But those resources weren't going to last forever. They might last a day, maybe two. And so even the leftovers were put to work. Because Jesus said, I am the bread of life. So if we use the analogy that Jesus refers to himself as a bread, as nourishment for your spirit, not for your tummy, but for your spirit, food for your spirit, like at communion. And we have the best communion bread in the world. So be here next week. We'll celebrate around the table, and we'll have some of that great communion bread. Thank you, communion people, because you just make that day so special. But we say this is the bread of life, and it's just a little piece. I know you want to take more, but it's just a little piece. Why? Because it's enough to remind us that God provides for all of our needs. We're not getting a little piece because there couldn't be more. We only need a little piece in this moment to remind us of Jesus' death and resurrection. You don't need a boatload of bread to remind you that Jesus gave his body up for us. And so a morsel will do, a little square will do. And so the disciples were fed that day, and out of that mess of so many people, how are we going to eat? What are we going to do? We can't abandon them. They have come some great distance, some of them. And so Jesus takes the mess and turns it into a mess hall. And Jesus, now, they really like this, right? God solved my number one problem every day because I got to find something to eat. Well, if I just hang out with Jesus, it's like having a drive-thru. I could just wait for the next day for Jesus to do another miracle and just say, Jesus, I'm feeling a little hungry right now. I got a couple morsels in my pocket. And we just sort of expect Jesus to do these little miracles for us. They were so impressed with Jesus, they didn't want him as their Savior and Lord. They wanted him to be president. That they wanted him to sit in the White House. They wanted him to be king of the world. Because that's a great politician trick. Wipe out hunger. And that's what they saw. And so they wanted to take the mess of their lives, and they see the Messiah, Jesus, and they think all he is there to do is to solve the growling in their tummy, when actually, and Jesus cares about the growling in our tummy, but Jesus came to fill and satisfy the growling in our spirit. He came to provide nourishment for our spirit. And so this messiness, Jesus turns into a mess hall, but with the leftovers of God's abundance, he sends us all out as messengers. From a mess to a mess hall to messengers. What kind of messenger can you be? I know a lot of our conversations begin with but. I know a lot of our conversations say no. I know a lot of our conversations, maybe some of our attitudes creep in, that'll never work. Or we don't have enough, and sometimes it's totally true. But how often in our conversation might it be, yes, God can do that. I believe God can do that. How many of you faced a challenge in that nice, neat doctor's office, but that the news you heard wasn't great? Your blood pressure is really high. If you keep this rate, you're going to be dead in a week. Ooh, that's not good news. What can I do? So you want medicine. The doctor says exercise. We say we'd rather have medicine. But if I must, okay, fine, I'll exercise. And so we begin to build into our life those disciplines that help us become healthier. And so like with Jesus, he's the bread of life. We can't gorge ourselves on it, but every day we could read God's word. I know some of you are trying the 30-day challenge, and if you've forgotten the 30-day challenge, guess what? Tomorrow you could start again. And there's no penalty. There's no judgment. There's nobody that's going to crack a whip behind you and say, oh, wow, I feel really bad. I didn't do that 30-day challenge like Pastor Kevin suggested. It doesn't matter. Just start it again. And that's what the people of God on that hill realized, because every one of them had an experience with Jesus, not to make him the king, but to be their king, to be their king of the universe. And as disciples of Jesus, now we go down the hill and we try to get food to the hungry. We provide shelter for those who are homeless. We give care for the vets who seem to have lost their way. We give people resources to help with addictions that they might not, they'd be the last person in the world to think they had an addiction, but because of medication, other things, it wasn't monitored, whatever reason, now they have an opioid issue in their life. They need help and assistance. See, but with our leftovers, with the resources we have, we can begin to tackle these things. Jesus could have come down and solved hunger, war, poverty, famine, the whole thing. Why didn't he? Because he wanted us to do it. God wanted to give us enough leftovers every day in order for us to feed someone that we meet along the way. So what kind of messes do you have in your life? I'm not talking about your desk. What kind of order can God bring to that, to turn those messes into mess halls of abundance and to make you a messenger of hope and encouragement and peace? Let's feed the world. Let's feed Cape May County's spirits. Let's give hunger to visitors who visit, neighbors who are hungry. Let's hear the growling of people's hearts and their tummies, so that God can make a difference in all of our lives. Because Jesus is the Messiah, and he has come to feed us all. Let us pray.